Hey, this is Mike. So last week, Ethan and I started talking about Curiosity Shop, which was Michael Eisner's 1971 attempt to make a commercial alternative to the then ascendant Sesame Street. And it didn't go so good, but we talked so much that we split it into two episodes. So join us now for the conclusion of Curiosity Shop.
Your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Oh, but then there's one thing here that is actually actually kind of historical, is that the first episode, the music episode, actually includes the first running of a Schoolhouse Rock short.
Yeah, that's right. I did not realize that was Schoolhouse Rock. It was kind of it comes out of nowhere because the episode is about like music. And then all of a sudden we're seeing a Schoolhouse Rock animation explaining how multiples of three work. And it's like, well, there's music in this, so I guess it's thematic, but that's kind of suddenly we're learning math. So it's it probably fit a lot better when it was on Schoolhouse Rock.
Yes.
But the music is good
though.
Schoolhouse
Rock. They didn't show it as bumpers until a few years later. So this was the very first showing of Three is a Magic Number.
Man, it is funny because I was listening the whole time to that Three is a Magic Number, and they're explaining threes, and I was like, I'm sorry, you're gonna go through all this trouble to explain things that appear in three and that are magic, and you're not going to talk about the most magical threesome of them all, the Holy Trinity of our Lord God, this and his Son and the Holy Spirit. Wow. The Pope is rolling over in his grave. That's all I got to say about that.
Also, Trinity do faith and hope and charity make up?
Aren't they like in the Phantom Tollbooth? Like those princesses?
I don't know, but also another threesome listed is the heart and the brain and the body. It's like, okay, so the heart and the brain and literally everything else.
I mean, it's kind of more than three. I mean, you're really, yeah. I mean, if you could define anything as three, if, you know, that's the thing is like, they really are doing that. Cause it's like, yes, three is a magic number. Three is actually a number that is rife with symbolism in, you know, in a cultural context, because generally things in sets of three are considered more, numinous, I think, you know, like there's, for example, you know, and there's three wishes, there's three somethings. Generally in fairy tales, you know, you do something three times and the third time is when it works.
Yeah.
You know, there's the rule of three, which says that things are either.
Sorry, go on.
I was gonna say there's a rule of three in comedy. So things are funnier if you're in sets of three. And also, it implies in journalism too, because generally you're supposed to have, you know, there's the old thing where things are more true if they're in threes. If it's one, it's a fluke. If it's twice, it's a coincidence. It's a three times, it's a trend. So yes, the number three is very, you know, very important. But they're just picking random things and saying, hey, what if there were three pillows? What if there were three sheep? What if there were three light bulbs? Three.
Well, this was the very first Schoolhouse Rock short, and when Bob Dureau wrote the song initially, he was thinking about making an album out of it. But then this happened, and I think Michael Eisner was the one who was like, no, we should make this a regular thing. So, you know, for all the shit I give Michael Eisner about being a basically shitty person, you know, at least he believed in Schoolhouse Rock. And I thank him for that.
Yeah. And I'll say this, even though I'm being a little churlish about three is a magic number, the song does slap. It's got a very Quinn the Mighty Eskimo sound to it, you know. But I did think it was funny when like one of the things three is like, you know, a man and a woman have a baby. That's three. It was like, yeah,
that's
it
one
is.
Plus one equaling three. There are four lights.
It's like, that's interesting. You gonna tell us a little more about what exactly is going on there with when a man or a woman, you know, love each other very much, you know, Schoolhouse Rock? Are you gonna just leave that hanging? All right.
Yeah. And you know, they could have twins, but you know.
That's true. But they so three is a magic number is pretty good in this.
Also, I guess you didn't notice, but this is actually an extended cut that they don't usually show. There was a whole verse.
Oh, I did not notice,
There was the whole verse where it was showing how many times the multiples of three appear in 30. They left that out. I guess it was kind of redundant. That doesn't show in the Saturday morning version. Not even on the DVD copy that I have. So.
Oh, huh.
So maybe it's lost media like this.
Man. Well, you know, maybe Toon Tracker will get it. All right, so there's that. What other segments do we have on this show?
The song where Flip sings about his big fat girlfriend.
Oh my god, I can't believe I forgot about that one. Okay. oh my god what the hell. So Flip Opotamus is like, he's basically like saying, he's talking about like, hey man, what is he saying? He's like, I really miss sugar. And Pam says, isn't sugar fattening? It's like, oh my god, shut up, Pam.
She was.
Yeah, then Flip reveals that like actually, yeah, Sugar is the name of his ex-girlfriend who weighed 4,000 pounds. presumably she was also a hippopotamus, I think is the implication.
It would have been funny is like, well, one day you'll find a hippopotamus that's right for you, Flip. Well, my last girlfriend was a mouse. So,
I mean, you know, it's like, I've certainly, you know, seen enough DeviantArt of 4,000-pound mice. So, you know,
yes.
I believe it.
You're kitty.
But yeah, he starts saying, I called her Sugar, and Pam is like, because she was so sweet. And he's like, no, because she was so lumpy. It's like, well, okay. Oh, man. And then he sings about his fat girlfriend. And this is a pre-existing song.
Yes, this is a Hoagy Carmichael song, Huggin' and a Shockin'.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can tell it's a pre-existing song because it describes a totally different girl with a different name and a different weight.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've probably heard it on Dr. Demento many times, as have I.
Actually, no, I'd never heard it on Dr. Demento. I didn't realize.
Oh, really?
I'd heard the name, but I didn't realize it was a novelty song.
Oh, I don't know if it was intended as one, but they did play it many times. I didn't know who actually wrote it. I just kind of assumed that there was like the tone was like, oh, that's probably like, you know, like Robert Crumb's doo-dah straw boater hat string band or whatever, you know,
the cheap suit serenaders.
Yeah, that one, you know, the one where he got his, you know, his fellow like pervert cartoonists together and they just do like weird retro 20s barbershop songs.
Yes, the underground comics equivalent of the Rock Bottom Remainders.
Oh my god. It's probably like, I don't know who's in that band. It's probably like, you know, him and, there's other underground. Wife. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. He's got a new wife, doesn't he?
Does he? I hadn't heard of that. They'd been remarried. Aileen only died last year. So,
oh geez. Well, now I was, Now I feel bad talking about what a terrible cartoonist she was.
Well, I mean, she was a terrible cartoonist, but that was part of the charm.
Yeah. You know, now she's in that big French chateau in the sky. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure that I'm sure he's got a bunch of terrible underground cartoonists in his band or whatever. They can, you know, it's him and it's Itchy and Scratchy meet Fritz the Cat and I don't know, Von Baudet. I don't know who else does underground comics anymore.
Probably not Gilbert Shelton. In the 70s, he did a cartoon about Robert Crumb going to children's playgrounds and showing the kids comics with penises and vulvas in them. So
I bet that was drawn from life.
Yeah, probably. Little does she know, I'm really R. Scum, king of the underground comics. Truck, 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 truck.
Do you remember when Robert Crumb got interviewed by reporter
and we mentioned that on the show before. The reporter, you know, he didn't want to let he was way too forthcoming about I love getting blowjobs, and he's like, wait, I can't tell people that. I don't want my wife to find out that I like blowjobs.
I love it. It's like the guy who's like, it's like, oh yeah, I made a whole comic about a cat who loves getting blowjobs. Do you like getting blowjobs? No one can know. No one can know my terrible secret that I like getting blowjobs. It was like, oh man, Robert Crumb, you are such a disappointment. Go back and draw another Bible or whatever it is you do these days. God, whatever. Robert Crumb, more like Robert Scum. I just stole your joke, Ethan.
Yep, that's okay. I stole it from Gilbert Shelton. Head of the Ku Klux Klan.
That's what we do. We steal things.
That's what I do. I drink and I steal things.
But let's see. So what else we were saying? So what other awful things are on this curiosity
other
show?
Other awful things are on this show.
What other terrible things are they trying to sell us in this terrible curiosity shop full of shit?
Oh, boy. They really love the song Make Your Own Kind of Music. It was in both of the shows.
Oh, I kind of zoned out in a lot of the music. What was the music video for that one?
It was just them dancing and singing it live.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of musical bits in this show.
Yeah. And a lot of musical bits and just people kind of, you know, it almost feels like a Weird Al polka, but without the polka parts.
Yeah. Well, like the one where they're like, here's with the computer is like, here is the history of music and dance. And then it's like, well, it's not really a history of music and dance. It's more just stock footage of random dancing, you know?
The thing about heads was better.
Yeah. And then they had the one where it was like a march. They were explaining the concept of marching to us, which was kind of strange because they suddenly in the middle of it had the UCLA fight song.
Yeah. What's going on with this show? They didn't know what they wanted to do. And this was the special that was going to sell people on it.
Yeah. It's a lot of it's basically just like, hey, throw a bunch of kooky shit at the wall. I really feel like they just looked at Sesame Street and they were just like, oh, that's all this is. It's just a bunch of random shit happening. We can do that. And it's like, no, there's a lot happening in Sesame Street that is not going on here. You know, you've got characters that are, you know, that are developed and beloved. And, you know, because it's like, look, if you watch Sesame Street, there are very specific things that Oscar the Grouch does. And there are very specific things that Telly does. Right. And you don't mix them up. Whereas in this one, it's like, okay, what is the onomatopoeia all about? What is Arthur Aardvark about? What is the Oogle about? I don't know. They're just puppets, you know?
Yeah, they're just, you know, where do they come from? Where do they go? I don't know, Cotton Eye Joe. It's
Yeah, yeah. They were really just thinking the concept is put stuff on the put like flashing lights on the screen. That's enough. We don't need to actually. Plus, unfortunately, Pam is really dragging everyone down. You know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that kids on Sesame Street are great actors, but at least they just act. I think they just told be kids, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that everyone remembers, Harry and John counting to 20 and Kermit and the little girl singing the alphabet song. And she just starts substituting Cookie Monster for the letters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like just kids being kids. Whereas in this one, you get
these kids are actors. That's different.
Yeah. And Pam is, well, I also looked up, Pam is also not just the voice of Lucy. She was also the voice of Fern from Charlotte's Web.
She was a lot better in Charlotte's Web.
She is. It's funny because here, as soon as I realized she was Fern, I was like, oh, I can hear that. The thing is, Fern in Charlotte's Web is kind of a part that calls for some like big emotional acting, as opposed to the Curiosity Shop, where she's literally just like, I'm just hanging out with these three other kids and some puppets. So why are you so over the top? You don't need to do that here.
Fern does not come across as strident the way Pam does.
Yes. But anyway, so we get some music videos about dancing and singing. And then the granny TV tells us that like some things shouldn't be forgotten, like Charlie Chaplin.
It's like, okay. Yeah, it's just sort of like, what does that have to do with anything? It's like, well, nothing, but watch this anyway.
Yeah, it was like, here, watch this. And it was like,
it's like when your kids want you to, your kids drag you in to watch a meme when you were busy doing something and you don't know anything about what. Why is this supposed to be funny? Why are these heads popping out of toilets? I don't know.
Oh, is that the Skibidi toilet thing that everyone's talking about?
Actually, Skibidi toilet is more clever than that, but
I've never seen Skibidi toilet. I only hear people referencing it, so I don't know what it is.
Yeah. I don't think it's as big a deal with the kids as the adults think it is. They're just like, "Oh my god, this is the state of the children today. These are the people who are going to choose our rest homes." Oh
yeah. The adults always like doing that shit, you know, they're like, oh no. It's like, they're always having a moral panic about the kids these days. And you know how it is. I was funny. Cause the other day I was just like, I was out and about. Right. Uh-huh. And, I was trying to get somewhere in my automobile because I am an adult and I drive places. And the local high school had just, you know how it is. You know, us adults doing adult things, just adulting around.
Yes. An adult beer.
Ooh, you mean, that's a form of adult beverage, isn't it?
Yes.
That's what we like to call a daddy drink.
So I drink.
Yeah, we call that a daddy drink in this household. So whenever whenever my cat is like looking at me, you know, like Sandy will look at me because he wants to eat my tuna fish. I'm like, no, Sandy, this is a daddy food. You can't have it. When I'm drinking a beer. No, Sandy, you can't drink this beer. This is a daddy drink. Anyway, but like, you know, so the kids they're letting out for high school and they're walking around as high school kids do. And they're all walking around with their baggy pants and their ear pods or their iPods or whatever, and not looking when they're crossing the street because they got no object permanence because, you know, they're children. And so I'm just there like, god damn it, cross with the light. Don't just wander out in the street like you have literally no senses, like no peripheral understanding of the world, like a fucking amoeba. And so I was just like livid with rage, like, oh, kids, they're so stupid. I hate them. And then I was like, oh no, I'm old. But it was very weird.
I've never felt far away enough from kids to feel that way. I mean, I don't have much of an object permanence either. I can barely tell time.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I started thinking about it and I just realized all of a sudden that it was like, you know what? I mean, I'm old, you know, not ancient. I'm not going to die yet, but, you know, really? Old enough that I suddenly thought about, like, you know, if I had to think about, like, what it was like to be, like, you know, 15, right? Or even 20. I can't imagine that, you know, at all. It's like looking back at the life of a stranger. You know, it's so long ago and I was such a different person. And just thinking, like, you know, intellectually I can remember what it was like, but you know, it's so different that I can't even miss it, you know, because it's so, you know, it's like one of those things where you can't miss being young if you don't remember what it was really like. It's very strange to suddenly realize that. Anyway, I'm sure that, like, you know, it's one of those things like when your dad tells you, like, one day you look in the mirror and it's like, who's that old man looking back at me? So I was just like, oh, no, it's not so. I don't like it.
Again, no time sense, so I might as well have been 15 yesterday for all I know.
God damn, you'll be forever young, Ethan. Fuck you. Yeah, I hate you so much. Oh, I'm gonna be driving and when you were like crossing the street with no awareness of the light, I'll just be like, oh goddamn young whippersnapper. Oh.
And I'll just be like, skibbity toilet.
You'll be like, nuts to you, old man. Oh.
Yeah, then you'll slingshot one poking day, out of back pocket.
Yeah, Ethan, you're gonna be like reading the funny pages, and I'll come up and be like, "May I see?"
You asked for it.
Anyway, so why were we talking about oldness? I can't remember anymore. I'm so old. I've forgotten.
I don't remember. Oh, but I remembered something that I actually liked about this episode, which is the witch song. We haven't even discussed the witch character.
We forgot all about the witch. I don't know how to feel about this character.
She's really over the top like Pam, but she's definitely more talented, so I will give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, like there's points where I was kind of like, she does stuff that I kind of was like, where she's like, because she's a witch, she's like, oh, for badness sake. You know, and I was like, oh, I get it. I kind of love that. But she's also, yeah, a little grating. I do like when she's calling the kids like, all right, leprechauns, line up. Okay, gremlins, let's go. And it's like, oh, I like that. But
yeah. And Gerard says, well, how can a gremlin like me do this?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, well, you know, why don't you listen? What's her name? Gittle? Gittle the witch?
Yeah, Gittle. Gittle. It's like, where does this name come from? Gittle? That's not even a word.
I'm not really sure what's going on there. Yeah. I assume her costume was probably very like colorful, which we don't really get the full, you know, no. We don't really get much of that because this is black and white. But, you know, she's wearing like Tim Burton stripy socks and she's got like a little tiny, she's got like a witch hat, but it's really small and kind of pinned to her hat, like those little top hats that goth girls wear.
She's got that kind of Chelsea Dagger look.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good way to describe it. But yeah, she pops in and I guess she does songs. I don't remember.
The word witch. Yeah,
that's right. What does she do in the first one? I can't remember the first witch appearance. She leads them on a march, right?
Yeah, she leads them on a march. And first she creates a brass band for them, and then she shrinks them so the kids can actually play the instruments, and that's when we get the UCLA fight song.
Oh, that's right. Okay. In the second episode, like she does this thing where she because Gerard is trying to remember something, and so she's like, well, I'll help you by reminding you of the things that I remember. And maybe one of them will be the things that you... I will remind you of every single thing that I remember from my entire life. Maybe one of them will be the thing that you're trying to remember. And she does a song.
This would be a great time for Gerard to be like, that's okay. But nope.
Yeah, what is she actually... what is this song about? She's basically listing like characters that she wants to be?
Yeah, she's... This is actually a repeat from a previous episode. So she's, so it's like this parody of some of my favorite things, but involves her multiplying herself into the Wicked Witch of the East and Medusa and someone else from Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah, the third one. The third character is Lorelai, who is basically a Lorelai. I believe was a character from the Wagnerian ring cycle. She's a siren.
All kids know that.
Yeah. She was a siren on the River Rhine. I know this because my grandmother was a huge Wagner fan. So of course I heard a lot about Lorelei. But yeah, not exactly something that most of the kids will be familiar with.
Yeah. Lorelei, you know, from Nintendo's The Lore of Lorelei.
Oh, well that Lorelei. The song's pretty good though.
Oh yeah, I like the song a lot actually. I think I would like to hear it, you know, done better.
Yeah. That's Gittle's thing, is she's basically another, you know, another random, you know, I guess this is a thing about the Curiosity Shop as opposed to Sesame Street. I feel like when you watch Sesame Street, it was like, okay, there's a plot that's going on, you know, that you return to between the animation segments, right? And it'll be something like,
you know, they'll have an animated segment and then they'll return to, Telly trying to stand on one leg because Oscar dared him to or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's like it's thin, but, you know, it's for kids. It's like, and it's usually, you know, stuff kids can relate to, but there's like a storyline and you get to see your favorite characters interacting and doing stuff and like. Yeah. You know, it's a character driven show, I guess, is what it is. As opposed to in the Curiosity Shop, I feel like it's like, okay, the kids go into the Curiosity Shop and then they just basically, there's a check off a list of things that they need to do while they're here. They need to see Gittle. They need to see the computer. They need to see Balthazar and they need to
wake up the groundhog.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, need to wake up, like, the groundhog.
It's like having a small child with a very elaborate bedtime ritual. You know, you have to get two drinks, read her three stories, then you have to drag the monster out from under the bed and beat it up.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually a good way of describing it. That's exactly what it is. And once you've completed all the steps, the show can end. So that's what this just feels like. You know, because at the end, I guess there is a storyline, at least in the second one, because Gerard's got to remember something and he can't remember it. So they're all trying to help him remember it. And at the very end, his mom calls him through the supercomputer. His mom's got June Foray's voice, of course.
Yes.
And it turns out what he was supposed to remember was that he was not supposed to go to the Curiosity Shop until he cleaned his room. And anyway, but.
Yeah. Make a 6.5-year-old clean their own room. Well, I mean.
Yeah. But yeah, then Gerard is like, he's like, but I have so many questions I want answered here at the Curiosity Shop. Like, how do angels get their bathrobes on? And blah, blah, blah. And he just starts listing things. And then his mother's like, you know what? You can stay there at the Curiosity Shop. And then that's the end of the episode.
Yep.
Anyway.
Don't bother coming home. We're not going to feed you anymore.
Yeah, don't bother coming
home. You broke
home.
Your plate.
So that's the cure. Oh no, wait, we forgot the most important part. Let's talk about Balthazar.
Yes.
Okay. So these they're plugging in these Croatian cartoons, very Worker and Parasite type cartoons. These are insane. These are absolutely bonkers. And I feel like these were probably, they got these Croatian cartoons and they were just like, I don't know. They just gave it to the Balthazar guy and was like, just make up whatever. Doesn't matter. Just make up whatever is happening and just narrate them. Just like the Magic Roundabout, you know, or What's Up Tiger Lily, you know? Cause I'm not, I'm, these are strange. These are
they're strange, very strange, but they're kind of wonderful too.
Yeah. So the first one is a little more, slightly more coherent, but it's the story of Balthazar, Baron Balthazar is, he has a tailor, and the tailor makes music by snipping his scissors, basically. And so the tailor teams up with a glass blower who makes music by blowing on a jug, and a trash man who makes music by slamming the lid of his trash can. And they try to make a musical trio, but no one likes them. So they go into space and they do music with this singing alien, and then everyone likes them. And that's
yeah. The end. And everyone gets into these spaceships that Professor Balthazar invented by attaching a pinwheel to a washing machine. And
yeah.
goes to see them. So it's like, wow, Professor Balthazar, you invented Stomp.
I do like that, like the washing machine pinwheel thing, because it's very Eastern Bloc robot cowboy.
It is.
Speaking of another example of non-traditional gender presentation, the alien that we meet is, Balthazar says it's a lady alien, and this alien is basically a head with a foot and a giant mustache. So
yeah.
Again, maybe wasn't supposed to be a girl alien in the original Croatian. I don't know, but like good on the Curiosity Shop for mixing it up a little. Anyway, that is the first Balthazar cartoon. The second one.
Brace yourself, Ethan,
maybe you should explain this one, because I don't know. I feel like I am losing my mind.
Professor Balthazar tells the story of how he knew a cop back in his hometown, his downtown Bosnia, as he says, who had a secret fetish for blowing on party streamers, the ones that go. And then one day he accidentally brought one with him to his job as a traffic cop, and he blew it instead of his whistle and got fired. Professor Balthazar, in trying to comfort him, suggests he go find out what his boss's secret peccadillo is. And as it turns out, his boss likes to draw mustaches on advertising posters. So the professor brings them both to his house, and he shows them how to do this sort of, you know, happy clappy patty cake dance that takes you into, that warps you out of reality and into a world of imagination. And so he wants to check up on them. So he talks to his friend, the insane train traffic regulator. And the two of them do the happy clappy dance and find their way into the land of imagination. And eventually everyone in Bosnia lives there instead of in the real world. And he said, we have found a place where people can, we founded a town where people can find true happiness by making complete fools of themselves. And we called it Las Vegas. And that's the end of the cartoon.
I mean, I get what they're trying to go for with that Las Vegas line, but it's not really hitting right.
No, especially because, what was it in the original Slavic?
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder in Bosnia, what town is the fool town, you know?
Yeah.
Like what is the thing that everyone in Bosnia is like, oh yeah, that's the idiot town. Oh, it's so funny that you mentioned in your cartoon that it's the idiot town, because they're all idiots there. Moscow. Yeah. It is a strange thing, because it literally is just like, oh, well, you can play patty cake and it just transports you to the silly dimension. Okay. All right.
Well, is this what you ever tried it?
I can honestly say I've never tried it.
Okay. Okay. Next time we see each other, let us take a vision quest to the silly dimension.
We're going to go to the silly dimension. We're going to go to, yeah. So that is, this was probably, maybe this is some sort of magical realism that like is really big in Bosnia or was big in Bosnia, which by the way, it's very strange, that this, I mean, this is a Bosnian cartoon. So yeah, I guess it literally makes sense from, that they would.
Yeah. From Bosnia. Or which so, was not, you know, yet called Bosnia at the time.
Right. It was still, I guess it was still part of Yugoslavia at that point.
Yes.
So actually that is kind of interesting then because, well, several things here is living in the year 2024. It's kind of weird to have it all mentioned Bosnia of all places, considering, you know, the whole genocide and everything. Yeah. That happened. I mean, not that's in the past now, and apparently the kids don't remember it because it was back in the 90s, and all the kids today are too busy with their modern agogo genocides. They're too busy like thinking about like what the other 12 genocides are happening right now. They can't be bothered to remember the classic genocides that happened in the 90s. Anyway, this is very dark humor, so please yes. do not take that out of context. So it's just odd hearing Bosnia of all places name checked there. But it's also strange because this came out in the 70s when it was part of Yugoslavia. So it's very interesting that they specifically say Bosnia, not Yugoslavia, because I feel like Americans would be like, Bosnia, what the fuck is that? Is that some fairy tale country? You mean Yugoslavia, yeah. don't you?
I mean, yeah, I mean, a portion of it was called Bosnia at the time, I presume.
Yeah, maybe they thought that saying that Americans would just think it was like a made up country, you know. So
yeah, like
so I maybe mean, that's why they got away actual, with Bosnia.
Was there not at some point an actual Bohemia?
There was a Bohemia. Yeah, I believe it's still around. I mean, it's. I don't think it was ever an actual country. I think it was always a kind of a vague region. You know,
yeah, it was a historical region in the Czech Republic.
Oh, OK. So
it makes up about half of Czech today.
Gotcha. And that's where all the beatniks come from.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where all the, you know, all the people who, you know, buy who will make themselves a sandwich in the grocery store come from.
Man, they're just, you know, they're just living by their own rules.
What are you Bohemians rebelling against? What do you got?
I do like that Baron Balthazar.
Yeah.
He specifically does mention at the beginning of one of these cartoons that he was running away from revolutionaries when this happened, which considering that he is like from Eastern Europe, from like the Eastern Bloc is kind of, and he is a Baron is very interesting. You know, Romanoffed. Romanoffed.
Yeah. I was going to say, I wish I could get back in touch with my niece, Anastasia. Whatever happened to her?
This is the sort of cartoon where I'm almost surprised they didn't ad lib a line like that, you know? So yeah, these Balthazar cartoons, these Baron Balthazar cartoons are they're very strange. They're kind of I feel like we're not getting the full flavor of what they should be because yeah. I don't know that they're translated. Nothing else,
I want to look up more Balthazar cartoons because apparently he is well loved. There's a statue of him in Zagreb, and there is. And Craig McCracken said that Balthazar was a significant influence on his show Wander Over Yonder.
Oh, huh. That's interesting.
Which is very weird because Wander Over Yonder is about space.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I mean, there's a whole world out there of, communist bloc cartoons that we're not really aware of. It is always interesting because like I feel like that kind of represents a road not taken. A road not taken because when we think of cartoons nowadays I mean, I'm going to generalize here. I think we're usually thinking of like, well, there's like, you know, Western cartoons, which are obviously all just influenced by Disney. And there's Eastern cartoons, anime, which are also influenced by Disney. And you can see them kind of, you know, influencing each other in weird ways that kind of, but like then there's, yeah, there's the Eastern Bloc, which kind of evolved in its own direction, you know, untouched by this, by the capitalist pig worms. Yeah. So, so, you know, you get things like Hugo the Hippo and, Mr. Twister and, the one about the dog that inherits a factory. And this one, Balthazar, Baron Balthazar. But anyway, I would be curious to see more of that maybe. But we get a, yeah, it's
if there's a podcast about Eastern European animation, let us know.
Yeah, I'm sure there must be. You know, there's always some nerds out there who talk about any dumb old thing. You know,
like comic strips.
No, not like us. We're cool. anyway, Wizard. So is that everything about the Curiosity Shop?
Everything I care to talk about.
There's I will say one last thing of interest here, because you know, Michael Eisner thought this was going to be his Sesame Street killer, and so obviously he he's pulling out all the stops. He had Chuck Jones involved. He had Vincent Price coming on. He had Mr. Wizard. But there's also there's some other big names involved in this. We also, of course, mentioned Mel Lazarus and Johnny Hart and Hank Ketchum. But there are other names we did not mention, and that is that the music was done by Henry Mancini.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and apparently one of the writers of this show, Ray Bradbury.
Fucking Bradbury. They really thought that Curiosity Shop was like, you know, we're going to get all of the top talent for Curiosity Shop. And this is what you got out of it? I wish I could see the Ray Bradbury episode. So, I mean, Bradbury wrote an episode of Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Wait, did he?
Yeah. I think he might have written the Zizzy Baluba episode, but I'm not sure.
Wow. I'm losing my mind. Ray Bradbury, man of a thousand faces. I guess, he wrote that like prune commercial. So I guess he'll do all sorts of things.
Prune commercial.
But, well, Ray Bradbury was a big believer in the magic of childhood. So I guess it makes sense that he would write like, you know, Pee-wee's Playhouse and the Curiosity Shop and stuff like that.
Yep. And speaking of Michael Eisner, there is a story here where I believe it was one of his fellow puppeteers said the angriest that I've ever seen Jim Henson was when we were starting to make the deal to sell Disney to the Muppets. And he had made it clear to Michael Eisner that this was for the Muppet Show characters, that he would not be selling the Sesame Street characters. But Michael kept talking as if he was going to be buying Sesame Street too. And, you know, at some point over dinner at some five-star restaurant, he said something about the kind of thing that we could do with, you know, Big Bird and Mickey Mouse. And Jim Henson just dropped his fork and was like, there you go again. Now, just imagining, you know, the kind face of Jim Henson hardening at that kind of thing, and you realize that Michael Eisner had been drooling over Sesame Street for so long. He wanted it so badly, and he couldn't make it himself.
It's wow.
Like, oh, I mean, I want Tickle Me Elmo for myself.
That's such a rich guy thing, though, isn't it?
Yes.
You know,
you can't make your own, so you have to have the original. He wanted to buy Sesame Street and rename it X.
Oh, my God. Oh, I guess, there are a lot of bad things. And we sometimes think, at least I think, we're in the worst timeline. But at least we're not in the timeline where Michael Eisner got his mitts on Sesame Street, you know?
That's for damn sure. Yeah.
You know. I mean you know,
Sesame Street is not what it used to be, but it would have been not been what it used to be a lot sooner under that kind of direction.
Yeah. So that does. So is that why you don't see cameos from the Sesame Street characters in any of those new Muppet movies?
Yes, that's pretty much it. Because there's the Muppets. You know, the Muppets is what you call all of the puppet characters created by Jim Henson. But the Sesame Street Muppets and the Muppet Show players, the troupe who calls themselves the Muppets, are owned by two different groups at this point. Though they do share puppeteers a lot of the time.
Okay. So I guess, Michael Eisner, he was, this was the best he could do when he was trying to make his own Muppets. And,
I've seen worse.
I don't think Michael Eisner's a creative guy, you know?
No.
I don't think he's good at it. I think he should stay
what he's... I don't think he's much of an idea man.
Yeah. I think he should stay at what he's good at, which is giving really stilted monologues in Mickey's 60th anniversary.
Yeah.
Where he's all like.
I just hope that they don't finger Roger Rabbit. Remember what happened last time he got framed.
Oh, yeah. And then so the way he says that, like we're going to go to a Family Guy cutaway. remember the last time Roger Rabbit got framed, and then it just there's a big cartoon thought balloon cloud over Michael Eisner's head, and it just has like dollar signs in it.
I was thinking that the thought balloon would just start showing the entire movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh man, wow. What a movie. Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
I think I've talked enough about Roger Rabbit on this show in the past. So yes.
Roger Rabbit is good. I don't think anyone's going to argue otherwise.
Yeah. But let's see. The Curiosity Shop. My curiosity is filled. Yeah, it's a curiosity. It's interesting to see, what would have replaced Sesame Street in the worst timeline, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting to just compare the names and that, a curiosity shop is not somewhere you go and hang out every day. It's somewhere you poke your head in because you're curious, but you live on a street. It's part of you. It's part of your identity. I don't know about you, but I remember every street I lived on growing up.
Yep. That really shows kind of the different ethos of these two shows, I think.
And shop is where you buy stuff. And a street is just where you live.
Mike Leisner's like, maybe think of all the merchandise that we can sell in the curiosity shop. Everyone's going to have a granny TV in their house. Every kid's going to want like a shitty 70s supercomputer. Every kid's going to want that griddle.
Where does this word come from? It sounds like, some sort of cornmeal dish.
I keep thinking every time she says griddle, I was like, I don't know why. That sounds like some sort of like archaic slur.
It does. Hey, you griddles, get out of here.
Get. We want to. It's there goes the neighborhood, all them Gittles moving in. The Gittles with their vittles. The curiosity shop is like, you know what, but I will say that like a lot of stuff was happening on the screen, but I could not get over Pam the whole time. All I was thinking about is like, what is up with Pam? What is going on here? What did they inject her with to get that like performance?
Between her and the two girls from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I think that's just what girls sounded like in 1971.
Oh my god. Oh, what a I'm so god. Ugh. What a terrible time to be alive. Yes. Well, you know, I feel like you're kind of right. Because like I feel like the boys had the opposite thing going on
They didn't have enough personality.
Yeah, like in Willy Wonka, but also in this. So I'm just assuming that in the 70s, girls were just like, all girls were like just insane theater kids, and all boys were just like strung out on Quaaludes, and that was just the way it was. Those were the two genders back then.
Did you see the recent movie version of A Wrinkle in Time?
I did, yes.
Okay, you remember the 5-year-old kid walking, you know, stalking in a circle and steepling his fingers and being evil. That was what Gerard reminded me of.
Yeah, it's kind of the vibe. Gerard was, I guess, for a boy of this time, extremely vibrant, because he's performing at least, as opposed to Ralph, who is just kind of like, you know,
I'm guessing again, Ralph is somebody's son.
Yeah. I still can't get over that one bit, the introduction to Miss Peach, where he's just like, Marcia, yeah, blah, 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 Marcia. It's like, what are you doing, Ralph? I mean,
you're such a Marcia. You're nothing but Marcia.
I can at least figure out what Pam is trying. I can at least understand what Pam is going for. It's terrible, and I hate it, and I hate that child, but it's comprehensible. Ralph is just, I mean, maybe he's a more natural kid, because he's not acting, he's just, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, Ralph has got, like, weird. The beatnik's energy, like the guy who says, I killed that fat barkeep!
We haven't mentioned, there is a fourth kid we mentioned, Cindy. She's the black girl who's only in some episodes. And we haven't talked much about her because she doesn't really have any lines or personality, to be honest.
No. I mean, Pam just drowns her out to the point where I just sort of wonder if Pamela Ferdin, who played Pam, was just like, this is my chance. I cannot let this bitch get in front of me. You're not taking this from me.
Oh, maybe that's the reason they couldn't have both girls on set at the same time, honestly. Because, like, they ended the first episode.
Two women under one roof.
Yeah, they just did that in the first episode. They had them there, and they were just like, oh, no, we can't have them both at the same time. Because Pam is just, like, basically pulling, like, a drop-dead gorgeous thing and trying to murder her co-stars.
The original Tanya Harding.
Yeah. She's got, actually, that's the kind of energy she's got, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, hopefully Cindy is not actually been murdered by Pam. Hopefully she's doing okay.
She's a retired actress, but she was in a whole bunch of things in the 80s. She was in a number of voice acting things, and she had roles on, like, Chips, The Fact of Life, Different Strokes, Jeffersons, you know, a bunch of different stuff. But, you know, I think that she got out of acting in, like, 1987 or so. So.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. Good. Well, it sounds like she did all right for herself. Yes. It looks like neither Ralph nor Gerard have Wikipedia pages, so no. Maybe this was, you know, maybe this was their only. Well, you know what? Let's check IMDb out of morbid curiosity. Out of morbid curiosity shop,
the morbid curiosity shop. Oh, that's something I want to watch.
Oh yeah! Wow, that's way better than anything. That should be the new thing. Okay. All right, so let's see, Gerard. John Levin, let's see, what else has he been in? Okay. Well, apparently he's also known for being in the Bad News Bears TV series, a movie called Dracula's Dog, and, he's been in a few things, so he's again, looks like he got out of acting by 1979, so... Mm, okay. And let's see, how about our man Ralph? Let's see, Ralph. Kerry McLean, who is known for, oh, okay.
Something you're familiar with?
Yeah, so he's been in a bunch of stuff. You know, he's been in the Streets of San Francisco, ABC After Show specials. He was a voice in A Cricket in the City. But most surprisingly, I think, is that he was in Johnny Got His Gun, which is kind of a very surreal anti-war movie. Which
by Dalton,
you know,
Trumbo.
He plays. Yeah, he plays a young Johnny, apparently. So,
wow.
Just kind of a surprise to see that. Anyway, so I guess, they all did other stuff, at least. Yep. So, that's the Curiosity Shop.
Yep. Our curiosity is Satan.